Hey, everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of the Psychology of Games podcast. My name is Jamie Madigan, and my mission in life is to popularize the use of psychology to making and understanding games and their players. In every episode of this podcast, I interview an expert on the overlap between psychology and video games to answer a specific question. I also have hundreds of other articles and dozens of podcasts over at psychologyofgames.com that you can check out. There's also links there to find out how to follow me and stuff. Go check it out. This is the episode about achievements and motivation. Hey, you know this sound, right? Yep, that's the sound of someone popping an achievement on the Xbox. Or how about this one? Yeah, that's the sound of somebody unlocking a trophy on the PlayStation. Not a console gamer? No problem. Here, listen to the sound of unlocking an achievement on Steam. Oh, right, those don't make any sounds for some reason. Well, regardless, you're probably familiar with the concept. Achievements, trophies, badges come in many different types and results of doing many different things, but at heart they're all basically little kudos delivered as a reward for doing something within the game. Other people can see your achievements by viewing your profile, and getting some of the harder or more grindy ones can be seen as a kind of badge of honor for a lot of gamers. Point is, achievements, trophies, and badges have become an almost ubiquitous part of the gaming experience, right up there along with loading screens, progress bars, and save menus. And for good reason, you would think. Achievements and the rewards that come with them, one would think, act as goals. Things you want to achieve or accomplish. It's right there in the name. There's a long history of psychological research showing that rewards are useful for motivating people to do something like work a job or beat a game. Goals and expected rewards give us something to focus on and aim for. They help us tune out distractions. Rewarding good behaviors is how you get more good behavior, right? Achievements in games can only do good by keeping the player engaged and motivated to keep playing and trying new things, right? Well, it depends. Humans are complex creatures with finicky thoughts operating in nuanced social environments. Sometimes, under certain circumstances and under certain interpretations of what's going on, rewards can actually lower motivation. Or they can create unintended consequences because the goals blind people to all other considerations. Take, for example, the trouble Wells Fargo Bank employees have gotten into recently over gaming an incentive system by creating phony email accounts and signing up customers for accounts they never asked for. As the saying goes, be careful what you reward, you might just get it. But surely not video games, right? Surely achievements are just straightforward ways of motivating players to set and reach goals that always get you the results you expect, right? Well,
that reason alone is why I get a little concerned when you look at achievements and trophy systems. Taken to a gameplay perspective, you have players doing something that they already want to do. And they're not really playing games because somebody is forcing them. It's a fun thing to do that you do as a hobby. And now, on top of that, we're just kind of force-feeding extra rewards into their throats. Here's extra achievements, here's extra tasks you can do and stuff like that. Here's another reward. So do we need to worry about this effect happening, where people start to shift some of their reasons for playing the game for fun into doing them for the rewards that you can get?
In this episode of the Psychology Games podcast, my guest and I are going to explore the psychology behind achievements, trophies, and badges, including some circumstances where they might not quite function as intended. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us on the interview portion of the podcast once again. My guest this episode is Michael Hannes, and he is a newly minted psychology PhD who has done some really interesting work and some interesting research on the psychology of achievements and trophies and those types of things, especially from like a motivational perspective. So, Michael, thanks for coming on. I'm glad to have you.
Hi, Jamie. It's really great to be here. I told you a little bit off air, I'm a really big fan of your work and blog, so getting the email from you is pretty exciting.
Awesome. So, yeah, I appreciate it, and I'm glad to hear that people like you are reading this stuff, because you are much more of a researcher than I am, so it's You're the kind of person that I steal your stuff and I write about it. So the least I could do is actually have you on to tell us about it in your own words on this episode.
Fair enough.
So who exactly are you and what are you doing here?
So I graduated from Ohio State last May with a PhD in communication, and my specialty is kind of interactive technology, and especially how you, when using interactive technology like a video game, it can change the way you process messages like an advertisement. So I got hired at the University of Nebraska. I'm in their College of Journalism and Mass Communication, and I work in their advertising and public relations sequence. So I'll be here doing research a lot on new interactive technology and how it relates to persuasion. But I kind of got to that point in a longer roundabout way, starting looking at achievements, looking at motivation, looking at video games. And so those are all still an interest I carry forward and I'm going to keep working on.
Okay, cool. And specifically what I ran across your name and found really interesting was some of the research you've been doing on the motivational qualities and the psychological role of things like achievements, trophies, badges, those types of things. Those little rewards, those little carrots that games give us and hold out for us to say, yay, you earned a little thing and here's a little fanfare. And it's sort of one of the things that everybody, you know, who plays games pretty much on any platform has experienced because they become baked in. And you know, a lot of times when I talk to people and say like, oh yeah, like I write about the psychology of video games, it's one of the topics sort of after like, oh, like violence and addiction and all that stuff. But it's one of the topics that people bring up about psychology. So it seems like it's a lot of interest to people. So like, what do you think the purpose of those, you know, achievements, trophies, badges, and even things like, Xbox's gamer score points, those types of things. Like, what's the purpose of those in video game design? Like, why are they there?
Sure. I think you have to think about it from two perspectives. And the first, like, why are the game makers putting it in? Why is Microsoft now requiring every game maker to have an achievement system? There's certainly some evidence that these are effective. There was a study that showed that the more achievements you have and the more diverse they are, the better reviews you're getting, and the more people enjoy your game, the longer they play and stuff like that. So there's definitely something to it from the designer perspective that says, hey, this might be another way we can get our players to be more engaged with our game, get them to play longer, right? Because there's a lot of strong psychological principles about time investment and commitment, right? So the more time you put into things, the more likely you're to stick with it. Maybe the more likely you are to buy the DLC when they come out with that. Maybe the more likely you are to get the sequel to that game. And maybe it's just increasing the amount of time you're spending within, you know, the Xbox world and Xbox Live and browsing their other products and increasing your likelihood of purchasing something there.
So it's safe to say that they do increase engagement, at least in some circumstances. They keep people interested.
I think so. Or I think that's the intention, at least. And from what I've sort of preliminarily found, that seems to be the case. And you can read it all over online how different people really look for these achievements and talk about them and think about getting them or join together with other people to get them. I think game players' perspective, when you're looking at achievement, this is something that I can do now that I couldn't do before. It gives me extra reason to do stuff. I played this game that I really enjoy, and now I have a list of things that I can do to stay in here. I haven't just completed the story and all the difficulty modes. Now I have a list of objectives I can go out and try. But I think when you're thinking about achievements and trophies, they're really interesting from a research standpoint because it's a little hard to pin them down. They're two things at the same time. On one hand, they're goals, right? They give you a task to do. And at the same time, they are the reward for getting that, for achieving that goal. You get the badge that comes with it. You get the achievement title and the points that come with it. So if you're trying to like look at the literature and some of the other research that's been done on these topics, are we thinking about achievements and trophies as goals, as rewards, or as some combination of both? And if so, how does that work in this whole context?
Right. So just by virtue of an achievement existing, it can set a goal for a player to pursue or alert them that even like a certain activity is possible. within the game, right?
Exactly.
But then you also hear about, you know, these types of rewards. So like in the organizational psychology literature and, you know, work psychology and sort of management world, rewards are used to motivate people, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you work and you get a paycheck, you work, you get benefits, you get a safe place. But also like, okay, we're going to try to structure your job so that it's inherently interesting and that you're doing rewarding things, things that are important to you, things that are important to other people like customers and coworkers. And there's a lot of different ways that you can use like rewards to motivate people, to get them motivated to do their job. Do you think that that maps at all onto the world of gaming where these things are being used to motivate people to not work, but play?
Yeah, I think so. And that's kind of what got me into this whole line of research with achievements and trophies. When we're talking about motivating people, there's a long history of debate about whether we should give them rewards to do so or what is the best way that we can get someone to do something. The old debate over whether you should pay your kids to get A's on their report cards or how do we motivate a student to learn more or do better in class.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a long line of psychology research on this, giving rewards and what it does for motivation. And I was reading a lot of that, especially in the education stuff, and thinking, well, a lot of this research kind of indicates that it might not be such a good thing. I think it's kind of generally understood that paying your kids to get good grades doesn't always lead to the best outcomes. So why are we taking this concept and applying it to something else like games, giving people extra incentives, extra rewards to go and do something, especially that they're already doing anyway, that they're already enjoying and playing and things like that?
One of the things that you've written about, in the papers that I read was the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation and intrinsic and extrinsic motivators and how achievements and trophies sort of map onto that. So can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. When you're thinking about why you're doing something, why you're motivated to do something, the literature kind of breaks it into two examples. You're either doing something because you want to, and they call that intrinsic motivation. You can think of it as internal motivation. I'm doing something because I want to do that. That's something I want to go out and do for my own reasons. And then they kind of break it into other versions of motivation, which are from outside forces, extrinsic motivation, external to you. So is there some outside force motivating me in a way to get this task done? Am I being told to do it? Am I being paid to do it? Am I being given a reward to do it? Am I afraid of some consequence for not doing this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Those are all factors that happen outside of my own internal state and desire. And you talked about this with Carl Kopp a couple podcasts ago, which I thought was really interesting. But he makes the really good point, like, these aren't just one or the other. You're not intrinsically motivated to do something or extrinsically motivated to do it. It's kind of a combination of both. You have two sliders in you. Well, I'm approaching practicing my free throw shots today, both because I like basketball and I enjoy getting out on the court, but also because I'll look better to my peers if I can play at a higher level on the team and how they look at me. I'll get more playing time from my coach. So that's both intrinsic and extrinsic factors that are motivating me to do that. So they kind of come into play in both cases here.
So, yeah, it's kind of a truism that every behavior has multiple inputs, right? Multiple causes. We're complex creatures. We take a lot into account. So which are trophies, achievements, that sort of stuff? Are those intrinsic or extrinsic motivators?
So I think just from the way that they define it, it's pretty safe to say that achievements and trophies are extrinsic motivators. They're coming from something outside of you. The game designer is making these. You're playing the game, and the game is giving them to you in terms of goals and tasks to do. And the rewards themselves are extrinsically motivating. If you do this thing, you'll go and achieve this outside reward given to you by someone else. But a lot of how we interpret rewards and motivation comes to what we think of them when we look at them. So I might see the reward as an external force being given to me by the game designer, but if it reflects some intrinsic task that I'm doing and something I kind of want to do, I might not I might take that more as an internal affirmation of what I'm doing rather than some outside force telling me what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems to get kind of fuzzy sometimes where, you know, you might have an internal motivation to play a game like this game lets me express myself through like customization of my character. You know, it lets me be creative and artistic. And that's just something I like to do because I like that sort of stuff. But then like getting an achievement for unlocking 5 different costumes or for customizing your character or something like that, then sort of seems like it blurs the line between being the thing that you got that came from external versus just like a reflection of that internal motivator. And here's like something that you can show that you did for reasons that are internal.
Exactly. And that varies from player to player with how they see it. And it can vary from moment to moment within the same player, depending on which aspect of that reward is more appealing to you. And the way they kind of talk about rewards is they're broken up into 2 things that you think about. Are they controlling me? Are they telling me what to do? Or are they supporting me and given a sort of information that says, hey, what you've been doing is doing a good job. It's along the lines of what you've already wanted to do internally for your own reasons. So how you see the reward in that given moment depends on whether you take that as an internal or external motivator.
So that's another dimension on which we can describe motivators.
Exactly.
Or rewards. I guess motivators. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so whether it's controlling or whether it is, what did you say?
They say informational.
Informational.
Yeah, but you can kind of just think of it as anything that supports what you've already kind of wanted to do in the first place. It's a affirmation of your work and choices that you've made.
Okay. So in the context of video games, what types of in-game rewards are most effective? Which ones are most motivating? Which ones lead to more engagement?
I think that's a good question. Now, let me talk a little bit about something called the over-justification effect, because I think this is a good way to kind of give an example of how this all works, and we're not always just talking about external, internal, which can get kind of abstract. So one of the, and I don't have any proof for this story. It's been passed down to me through my advisor and his advisor, but
those are the best kinds of stories.
Yeah. In terms of the research on this stuff, it kind of backs up. It's a good example of how it works. So the story goes that there was a store owner of like a grocery store, and he was having these problems with these children throwing rocks at the outside of his grocery store. And he went to a prominent psychologist. I heard Zimbardo, but it could be anybody. Again, I have no idea if this is true.
Okay.
He went to a prominent psychologist and he said, hey, can you give me some technique to get these kids to stop throwing rocks at my store? Anything I do doesn't work. They just keep coming back every day and it's scaring away customers, and I just need something to do to get rid of them. So the psychologist thought about it and he comes back and he says, okay, here's what you do. So the next day, the store owner went outside and he went up to those kids. And this was back in the 60s or something when inflation wasn't as high. So he went up to them and he was like, hey, you know, I really enjoy you kids being around my store. This is great. It's great having youth here. It's great to see you having fun. It reminds me of my days of youth, whatever it was. Because you guys are here and because I enjoy that, I'm going to give you $1 just for being here. Thank you. And so he gave him $1. And maybe that was like, I don't know, $5 now or $20 now. It's not really important, but it was a fair amount of money.
Sure. Maybe give him like a Bitcoin or something.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how it would happen now. Let me pull out my my Square.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'll PayPal you.
So he gives them $1 and they just look at him like, what an idiot. This guy is paying us money to sit here and do this stuff that we were doing. We were throwing rocks at a store and now we're getting paid for it. Great. That sounds good. So then they kept throwing rocks at the store and thought the store owner was dumb. The next day, same thing happens. Owner comes out. Hey, great job. Really like that you guys are here. I don't have quite $1 this time, but glad you're sticking around. Here's 50 cents. And they think the same thing. And this goes on. Same thing next day. 25 cents he's given them. Now he's given them a dime. Now he gives them a nickel. And on the last day, he's like, you know, thanks for being here. Really appreciate it. Here's this penny. That's all I can really give you right now, but I'm glad you're around. Keep coming back. And at that point, the kids are like, oh, a penny? That's not worth my time. And I was getting paid $1. Why should I sit here and do this for a stinking penny? I'm not doing this anymore. and then they go away. So the over-justification effect is basically this idea of when you are intrinsically motivated to do something, when you're doing something because you want to do it, in which case is the kids throwing rocks at the store because they feel like it. If you start giving people external rewards or external factors of any kind, in this case, that money, people start to shift those sliders in them from being all internal and not a lot of external to, hey, maybe I'm not doing this because I want to. I'm doing it to get paid now. Mm-hmm. And I keep sliding that bar more. The payment becomes more important. And then eventually, because my main reasons for being here are to get paid, when that payment isn't enough, I'm not motivated to keep doing this task. So that's how the overjustification effect kind of works at its base. We can flip people from doing things because they want to doing things from an external force by giving them a lot of rewards and stuff like that. So that reason alone is why I get a little concerned when you look at achievements and trophy systems. Taken to a gameplay perspective, you have players doing something that they already want to do. They're not really playing games because somebody is forcing them. It's a fun thing to do that you do as a hobby. And now, on top of that, we're just kind of force-feeding extra rewards into their throats, right? Mm-hmm. Here's extra achievements. Here's extra tasks you can do and stuff like that. Here's another reward. So do we need to worry about this effect happening where people start to shift some of their reasons for playing the game for fun into doing them for the rewards that you can get? And I'm not saying this happens for everybody. I'm not saying it's cause for concern and sounding the alarm, but it's something we ought to look into more and decide, like, maybe this is something we should be concerned about.
So, yeah. So the overjustification effect sounds like a good thing, or it was put to good use in the storekeeper example, although I imagine those kids just went down the street and started smashing some other poor sucker's windows. But here you're... It sounds like it could work against the designs of game developers in that once you start offering rewards for things that the players were enjoying anyway, then once those rewards are over, like once they've earned the achievement, then they don't have a reason to keep playing the game.
Exactly. That's a potential problem with this approach, is what happens when the rewards run out, or what happens when they're not as worthwhile as they used to be. And there's a reason that game designers for years have increasing rewards as you go through a game. You start at level 1 fighting a rat and you get 10 experience points. But maybe those 10 experience points get you 20% to the next level. Mm-hmm. But by level 50, you're fighting some big monster, you're getting 10,000 experience points. And that might only get you 1% closer to your next level. But it still feels like you're getting more back. You're getting 10,000 compared to 10. So they have to keep upping the ante to make it more worthwhile.
Yeah, so I imagine there's things smart game designers could do, like you said, like stacking those rewards and those outcomes, gating achievements, like you can't earn this achievement until you've played through, you know, this part of the game or something like that.
Yeah, and I think reimagining some of these rewards as not just being contingent on the ending, on doing it, what they call performance contingent rewards. So that is, if I do something, I will get this. Mm-hmm. Is there another way that we can incentivize rewards? There are engagement contingent rewards where kind of if you just put in effort, you get a reward regardless of whether you completed it successfully or not. But there's a lot of movement that, you know, that's the give everyone a trophy award.
you press start. Yeah. Here's your
achievement. Exactly. And we know that people don't really like those either.
Yeah.
So
because they're meaningless.
Exactly. Can we reconceptualize them in some other way that emphasizes things like more cooperation with other people and working together towards a common goal? Because in this case, we know that cooperation can be really good for internally motivating people.
Yeah. You know, even outside of achievements and trophies, this makes me think of when you finish like the storyline, like the main quest or the main storyline of a game, but there's still stuff left to do. Like a lot of times I'll quit playing the game because I felt like I've already gotten the reward of finishing that main storyline. Like I was working through my backlog on the PS4 and played Infamous Second Son, which is like an open world game. And I finished the storyline in that, and you know, the little dialogue box came up and said, like, congratulations, you've freed Seattle, but there's still much left to do. Go, like, do all these little side activities. And I was like, nah, I'm good. I've had enough of this. Like, why? To what end? Like, I'm not going to get any more story beats out of it, which was a major reason for playing that game. And especially by that point, I had already done enough of those side activities that they weren't inherently interesting anymore.
Yeah, and I think this can be on an individual gamer-to-gamer basis thing too, but a lot of people look at additional quests like that as work to do,
mm-hmm.
or they look at them as like an opportunity for more things to explore and stuff. So how you're approaching that, because I'm definitely more on your side. I look at an achievement and I'm like, if that's not going to happen in my course of normal gameplay, I ain't doing it.
Right.
That's work for me. But we interviewed in one of the studies we did a whole bunch of different gamers and focus groups, and we're talking to them, and they range all over the place. Some of them sort of look at the game as a whole with achievements included and just want to complete all of the tasks possible. And that's just part of their normal gameplay. That's how they play games. And that's what they get enjoyment out of.
Mm-hmm. So there's individual differences amongst people, maybe something tied to personality or expectations that will determine how motivating some of these reward structures are?
Sure. I don't know enough about the individual differences. That's not what a lot of my work has gone into, but yeah. It certainly seems like in the general cursory in research we were doing in these focus groups that it's kind of coming down to that. But you can vary from where you come game to game as well.
Yeah. I know that there are researchers out there who are putting together like player types or archetypes that are based on, like personality inventories and some other measures of like, okay, you're like an explorer or you're an achiever or you're this type or that type. And it informs like what types of gaming experiences you're attracted to and which ones make you happy and satisfied. And I can imagine then that if you start looking at it on the mechanical level that, it would continue down to that level of analysis where these are the types of achievements or the types of activities that you enjoy, and whether or not you're motivated to do them would depend on both your makeup and how they were sort of presented to you in the game.
Exactly. And I think that kind of drilling down for the research, what achievement categories are effective for what kinds of players will build some of the most effective achievements in games mm-hmm. in terms of getting people involved. But I try and keep things to a little more of a broad overarching level. There's also factors you can look at. There's a need for achievement trait
mm-hmm.
that we can measure within people to see how much they in general want to earn things. And I've seen other classifications just for achievement people, like there's the casual, there's the hunter, and there's the completionist who has to finish everything. So just within achievements alone, there's a lot of variation in types.
Yeah. So kind of going back to the over-justification effect, you actually did a study on this in like a classroom gamification setting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you were at least involved in that study. What did you find there? What did you do?
So this was more for gamification in the classroom, but it all revolves around, these badge systems exist within games and outside of games. So in this case, we're looking at a badge system for an educational setting. And we had multiple classes for the same course. And in one course, we had the normal grading scheme. In another course, we had a mandatory badge system and leaderboards that they had to participate in. And in another class, we had it optional. And we mostly looked at the differences between the mandatory and the those that didn't have anything. But what we found between those two groups particularly is when you enforce a badge or leaderboard system, learning outcomes decreased. So we found that students had worse final exam scores at the end compared to those in the non-gamified system. And they were less satisfied overall with the course, and there are a couple of other negative factors. So there is something to be said for that happening in the classroom and them being forced to do it. But that, again, gives a little bit of evidence that indicates, hey, maybe just making all these systems and throwing them at people isn't always the best thing.
Right. A little nuance. I mean, in that case, those students were being forced to take the class, right?
Like, right.
It wasn't optional.
They freely signed up for the class, but within the class and the course structure, they were required to get 10 badges within the end of the year or something like that.
Okay. And when test time came around, they couldn't just be like, pass. You know, I'm not going to take the test. I'm not going to take the final.
Right.
Whereas in games, which is obviously a different context from the study that you're talking about, Everything is pretty much volitional, right? You get to choose whether or not, A, whether or not to play a game, B, whether or not to pursue a certain objective or play the game in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start, are there aspects of game design that might kind of counterbalance that over-justification effect and make it so that, like, yeah, that happens, but it's being offset by these other types of these other internal motivators?
Yeah, and I'll tell you a little bit about a study I did with the caveat that this was a terrible study, and it was, like, the first one I did in grad school.
Okay.
So
everybody, their first time is terrible. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's not like it's published or anything, but there's some data that kind of speaks to this point. And what we did is we had people either play a game or kind of watch a game. And as they were doing that, we just gave them money. And we just, like, would walk into the room and say, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Here's some money. And so this isn't directly linked to their gameplay like some achievements are. But the idea was to get at, when you're just doing what you normally want to do, what are these external rewards that pop up that you sometimes don't expect? What are they going to do to you in terms of how much do you like the game? How much will you keep playing? Or how much are you interested in the material?
Mm-hmm.
And again, what we sort of found is, when you give rewards to people who are playing the game, they tend to take those rewards as a pat on the back. It's clear that they're doing something, right? They're in there making choices within the game. They're jumping up and down. They're turning left and right. They're playing through as they want to and making all of these decisions and choices. So when you get a reward, it says, hey, some of those choices you made were right. And you did that. So good job. When you just give it to people who are sitting there watching, then they don't have those previous choices and experiences to fall back on. So the only way they can think about that reward is, somebody's walking in here and just shoving this at me. I don't really feel great about that. So that's kind of what we found. And that speaks a little bit to what you're saying, that there is something inherent about the nature of games that might change the way that we perceive some of these rewards, and that they might not be as negative as I was talking about earlier, or in the classroom context. They might be perceived more as that, going back to informational instead of controlling.
Right.
Because it all comes down to, do you think these rewards are an affirmation of your competence and are an affirmation of choices you made? Or do you sort of think of them as more, somebody else is just giving this to me?
Arbitrarily, yeah. Yeah, that makes me think about how we learn and just like human learning based on rewards and punishments. You know, when we receive an unexpected reward for something, like, it's human nature. It's how our brains have evolved that we try to figure out why we got it. Like, whoa, wait, something good happened. What in the environment can I be on the lookout for next time in order to predict when this is going to happen again so I can get more of a good thing? And if that's impossible, then it is almost by definition not motivating.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point and a really good way to think about it.
So given that, do you think that achievements and rewards, trophies like that, that are kept secret, are more or less effective? Because, you know, a lot of times you'll look at like a list of achievements, and maybe this is less than it used to be, but you look at like a list of achievements and it'll say like secret achievement, and it won't say what it is or how you get it until you actually get it.
Mm-hmm.
Are those more or less effective, do you think?
So going back to some of this research on intrinsic and extrinsic motivations, that's one of the things they looked at. Does expected rewards change things in a way that is better or worse than unexpected rewards? And the conclusion that I take from the many articles published on this is that expected rewards should be a little worse on your internal motivation than if they're unexpected. Because the idea is, if you're thinking about the reward a lot, then you get more towards that shift of I'm doing this for the reward instead of I'm doing this because I want to. But at the same time, in persuasion, I study something called reactance, which is basically resistance. When you feel like somebody's telling you to do something, we throw up a lot of barriers. We don't want to do it when we feel like we're being forced to do something.
And no, I don't.
Exactly. So I think unexpected rewards might actually, and I don't have proof for this, this is just my opinion, unexpected rewards might pop up a little bit more reactance if you're seeing them as controlling. Like, oh, wait, what? I was doing this thing and now you're telling me that I should have been doing it? Like, how dare you? Well, now I'm not going right. to do it anymore.
Yeah, there you go. There's a PhD dissertation topic for somebody listening out there.
Yep.
Yeah, so that it sounds like that kind of goes back to the idea of the rewards being controlling versus informational.
Right.
What other kinds of things determine whether or not a reward or an achievement or anything like that is going to be seen as controlling versus informational?
Some of it has to do with that expectation, whether they're coming. Some of it has to do with whether they're contingent on completing a task or for other reasons. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, like, in terms of what to do, if you build something around giving the player lots of choices and ways to affirm their competence, and these rewards are just a additional pat on the back that says, you know, you've done this work, you've made these choices, you are empowered in doing what you're doing, so good job. Mm-hmm. That's a really good way to make it not feel controlling. Because when you think about it, like, we've been getting rewards to do tasks a lot called getting paid for a job, and we're not like...
It's one of my favorite rewards, yeah.
Mine too, especially now that I have one out of grad school. But we're not just crippling the workforce, giving people money for what they're doing. A lot of them are still intrinsically motivated to do so, and some aren't. But so you're taking that money as an affirmation of what you've done. I've made these decisions. I've pushed forward these projects. This money is another affirmation that I'm getting what I deserve. And so I don't feel like I'm being forced to do it. And where you see the problems come up are where there's a discrepancy between that. I'm not getting paid enough that it really feels like a pat on the back for all the choices I'm making and stuff like that. I think you see this, or a popular example has to do with athletes and salary negotiations.
Mm.
So pro athletes, for the most part, always played the sport because they really wanted to since they were a kid. And that's they have this love for the game. But you can see some of them as they grow older and these huge contracts become a big factor of their work, sitting out and not playing in order to get a better contract. And this is a big sweeping generalization because a lot of times they do deserve more money and stuff like that. But at a very basic aspect, this is they're not doing this thing that they used to do because they wanted to for fun. And now they're more thinking about this external reward, which is being paid.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, money in the world of work tends to be a satisfier. Like, you get enough of it, and you sort of become satisfied with it, and then the additional things that motivate you tend to be more internal motivators, like you wanting to do a good job or wanting to make a difference or whatever. And right. the problems come up when perceptions of injustice or unfair, you know, like I do the same work as Michael, but I get paid more or less, and that starts to cause the problems. So, you know, we talked about the over justification effect. Any advice for game developers on things to avoid when building those reward systems in and those trophies before we move on?
The kind of big takeaways are you need to be careful when someone is already interested in a task. This is another factor that is involved in all these rewards. Because external rewards are actually really good when you have no interest in a task. If you want to get people to do stuff that they don't want to do, give them some external rewards, because then they can think about those rewards instead of thinking about the crappy task that they're doing.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of the issues come up when we're giving external rewards for tasks people are already interested in doing, like those kids throwing at the stones at the store. Then maybe it becomes a little bit of an issue. And because gamers are so wrapped up in this is something, gameplay itself is intrinsically motivating and they're initially interested in it, we need to be a little bit careful about these external rewards. So I guess my suggestion to game designers is be careful about these things seeming controlling. And I don't have great design suggestions for how that will be. But I think if you take caution and take steps to always make sure that the achievements are a direct result of a player demonstrating competence or making choices and going along their own path, you should be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, it almost seems like in fantasy land, the perfect system would be one that adapts to what the player is doing. So, you know, if they are playing the game and they're doing something like expressing a lot of different choices and maybe using different loadouts or different options, then they're doing that because they're having fun, presumably, so you wouldn't give them a reward. But if another player was just trying to stick to the same thing, then you might give them rewards when they start down the road of doing something different. And so the actual achievements might be customized to the what's motivating, or at least what the player is doing in that particular playthrough. I wonder if anybody's ever experimented with something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I think that'd be a good path to go down.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. So one of the other things that comes up when we talk about achievements and trophies is that you get to share them with people, or people can go and look on your gamer profile and see like, oh, Michael finished this game. He got all 1,000 points for it, or he beat Dark Souls on the highest difficulty setting or whatever. And that stuff is sort of interesting, and it communicates something about not only the types of games that you play, but maybe how well you play them or in what way you play them. So in one of your papers, you wrote about signaling theory. Mm-hmm. And how it can be applied to badges, trophies, and even like competitive elements of games like leaderboards and that type of thing. Can you talk a little bit about how signaling theory maps on to this idea?
Yeah. At the very sort of basic level, we display cues about our progress to other people. We create these signals to send out to other people to indicate things. Mm-hmm. And I think when you think about achievements and the kind of signals you're sending, especially in online contexts, especially when you could be more or less anonymous behind a pseudonym or a gamer tag or something like that, and you look at someone else's profile, we tend to place more value on things that can't be easily faked than we do on information that can be. So if you think about an online dating profile, I know that you could fake all of the descriptions about yourself. I know that you could even take a super flattering picture, but that's still a little bit harder to like truly fake, mm-hmm. Unless you just put up a totally different picture of somebody else.
Yeah,
it does. So is there anything that is definitely reliable? Is there some cue from the system that says something about me? Like maybe on my online profile, there's a spot where other people have rated me. Mm. So that's not something I can really fake unless I go to great lengths to do it, as some restaurant managers on Yelp do.
Right. Sock puppet accounts or get your friends or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. But it's a little more trustworthy. And so you get these cues from the system that are an affirmation that we can trust. And achievements are a pretty good cue from the system. Like, hey, this person objectively did kill 300 zombies this one time. Mm-hmm. He can't lie about that. I'm verifying this from a gamer design, from the game design or Xbox perspective. This is what happened. So we can place more value and trust into that signal, as opposed to them just typing like, I'm the best Halo player in the world. Well, come watch me.
Which they will also do. But
exactly.
Yeah.
But you can at least trust that achievement if it's there or not. But one thing to think about when it comes to how objective these achievements are, and this is something that came up in these focus groups we talked about, is, are achievements a reflection of skill when you see them on someone else's profile, or are they a reflection of time spent in the game? Mm. Because maybe you're really bad, and it took you 5 years to beat Halo on Legendary. That's more of a time investment than it is you beat it the first time through. You're really good at the game. Or some of these just have other achievements like this, where you can either be really skilled and get them quickly or just grind it out. And so what is that achievement saying about you when you look at it on someone else's profile or when you display it on yours?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me think I've been playing a lot of Overwatch lately, which is Blizzard's first-person competitive first-person shooter. And my daughter also plays it, and we only have the one Battle.net account. So, you know, we kind of share that account, and she's got, you know, she plays different characters than I do. And it kind of pains me to say this, but she's probably better at the game than I am at this point. Mm-hmm. She plays a really mean Tracer, can just rack up kills. And looking at that information, like, well, I don't have all of those achievements, or I don't have that record of kill to death ratio, you know, with those characters. And I feel kind of bad about it. I feel like I'm lying or miscommunicating something about myself whenever somebody looks at my profile like that. So I get what you're saying.
Oh yeah. Or I play a lot of Dota 2, and it's kind of interesting because on your profile, you can pick a few selected stats to show about yourself.
Ah.
And one of them is just like wins. Just how many wins you have. It doesn't tell
how many
games you've played. Not a ratio, exactly. So you can be like, you have no idea if this person is winning 9 out of 10 games or 1 out of 10 games, and they've just been playing for 10 years.
I wonder if people like to have that level of control over the signals that they send out, and where you draw the line about, you know, sending muddy or misleading signals versus letting people say what they want about themselves.
Yeah, and then you get into this whole aspect of impression management and the kind of person you want to display and for what reasons. But I think people like having the option, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. People like options. So you mentioned briefly the study you did where you essentially sat a bunch of gamers down and, I don't know if you call it like focus groups or sort of structured discussions around, like, what do you guys think of achievements and trophies and these sort of extra outside of game reward systems? And that's in a paper that's in Computers and Human Behavior that's in press at the time that we're recording. What did you find out from people when you asked them directly about this stuff?
So one of the things that really surprised me, and maybe this is because I'm a person that isn't crazy about achievements, but most people, almost everybody liked them, and the most negative things that they got to were mostly indifference. So they really weren't bothering people. I thought they might be distracting, and a little bit of that came up. Like, when you're in a cutscene of some intense storyline and an achievement pops up and dings in the right corner, like, that's going to pull you out of that immersion you were feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of that was reflected, but overall, and this is a very small group, but they seem to be a pretty big fan of them, at least just having them around. So they were like, meh, I might choose to do this, I might not, but I like having the option that they're there for some extra things to complete. And that was something that came up pretty often, was if they really liked a particular game, they'd be more likely to look at the achievements and fill out all the tasks because it gave you more of an opportunity to stay there.
Right.
Some other stuff we found has to do with what we were talking about just a little bit earlier with social status. A lot of people think about getting rewards and displaying them to other people. They think about the people that are looking at them. They think about what it says about yourself as a gamer, and a means of credibility that is harder to establish otherwise, like I said, when you could just write about yourself or something. So these are like objective markers that can be displayed to a lot of other people.
Yeah, they have social value.
And there's a lot of pride wrapped up in getting them and the hard ones and things like that.
So what about you? Like, knowing what you know about the science and the research, do you care about achievements and your gamer score or trophies or badges or any of that sort of stuff? Do they affect how you play a game?
A little bit, yes and no. I play mostly through Steam, and the Steam game launch page has a whole bar for all the achievements that you have or don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll like just kind of cursory check out what's there. But they do affect my gameplay a little bit. I was playing Life is Strange recently, and in it, if you take certain photographs of things, an achievement will pop up almost every time you took an achievement of this, because it's a kind of rare event. And so that got me to like taking more of these photographs and seeking out opportunities to do that than I would have otherwise. So that kind of, I don't know, I'm not crazy about that. I got that high reactance. I don't want to be told what to do in my game. I just want to go through it at my own pace. So I kind of think about them. It's kind of cool when I get one for a harder task or something like that. I'm not really playing to get them, but if I just, you know, we get that endorphin rush when a reward pops up regardless. So yeah, I'm just as vulnerable to that as anyone else.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same way. I don't generally chase achievements anymore, just because a lot of times they're buried under layers of UI to, unless it's the pop-up that's saying like, hey, you did this, at which point it's like, well, okay, it's over. I've done it. You know, it's not like driving me towards any goal. But I very rarely like go in and like look at a list of achievements and say like, oh, I'm close to getting this one. I don't doubt that there are people who do that. But I'm more driven, I think, by the internal or the in-game stuff that says like, oh, there's a quest marker on the map here. It's like, I can't leave this area until I've checked that off. Like, you know, oh, there's something in my quest log. I need to complete that and check it off. And maybe that's sort of the same psychological principles at play, as the badges and achievements and trophies, but, it's more in my face and it's more satisfying to complete that activity and see it disappear off of my, quest log or my, you know, to-do list with, or the map within the game.
Sure. And that's, a point I wanted to bring up as well. Like, I think we talk a lot about achievements as this sort of standalone reward system, but it's not. You are playing a game that has been super designed to give you tons of different kinds of rewards and motivators all throughout the game. You're completing quests, you're getting better equipment, you're leveling up. You sometimes they have points and a high score. Sometimes you just want to beat the opponent. Like, there's so many different rewards and motivators factored into just the gameplay. Why is there another layer of these, you know, and how do they all interact together? Because some of the rewards are, like I said, mandated by Microsoft. So how much are the designers thinking about incorporating them into the game? Some of them push you towards exploring other types of gameplay that you wouldn't otherwise, or some are just there for doing things you would normally do. I read that there was a achievement, yeah, for just turning on the game in a certain game that you could do.
It was Simpsons Hit and Run, I think.
Was that it? It
back on the 360, yeah. Like, literally, I think it was you press the start button and you got an achievement for it. And in that context, it was a joke. I mean, it was like, it's a Simpsons game, so it's kind of jokey, but yeah, it's at the same time, it's like, eh, okay.
Right. So I'm not convinced that they're providing, opportunities and rewards differently than the games do themselves. I think where achievements stand as something uniquely and different and theoretically interesting is in this social status that they can provide as signals of skill to other people. And yeah, they kind of really stand out that way.
Yeah. So what are the big unanswered questions in this area that you think researchers should be focusing on?
I think a little bit what we touched on earlier in terms of let's start making a category system of these achievements and breaking them down into types and looking at how they are more or less effective, how they more or less affect intrinsic motivation. I also think that there's some worthwhile work to be done looking at immersion into a game and how achievements mess with that. Are they breaking it? Are they breaking it a little bit, but it's not a big deal? Does that create a sort of, do you get angry when you're sucked into something and you're popped out because of a warning?
Yeah.
So I would be interested in work going in that way. And also, again, what types of players are the most motivated to look for these, and how do the different types work with those kind of achievement-centered players?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds... I would like to know the answers to those questions. So, yeah. Very much. Okay, so to close things out here a little bit, a couple of questions. What have you been playing lately? You mentioned Life is Strange, which I have in my Steam library downloaded, and I keep meaning to get to, but I haven't. Have you been playing anything else, or how is that?
Yeah, I really recommend that. I'm on the 4th of 5 episodes, but it's really interesting in terms of storytelling. Really well done. And I can never get away from Dota 2. I've been playing that since the Warcraft 3 days.
Wow.
And I decided foolishly to try and make Street Fighter 5 my first fighting game and I'm playing in a community full of people where it's, you know, they're just really good. So yeah. That's been rough going. Yeah, and I like to play some strategy war games. Hearts of Iron 4, I've been playing a lot too. It's really excellent.
That sounds like it involves tanks, right?
It does. It involves like, it's kind of like Axis and Allies from a computer simulation.
Uh-huh.
Pretty neat.
Cool. Most recently, myself going through my PS4 backlog, and I finished up Infamous and Infamous Second Son, which is the like a launch title for the PS4. So It's amazing how good it looks, though, for a title that early in that generation or that console's, you know, life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I play a lot of open-ended games, so I had a lot of fun with that. And then I play through a good chunk of Dishonored, the definitive edition on the PS4.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I don't really play single-player games because they get to a point where I feel like I'm just working instead of, and I want to see the story and how it ends.
Yeah.
But Dishonored was one of the few I went all the way through and really liked.
I love the world that they built there and sort of the, I don't know if steampunk's the right word, but sort of middling technology where like there's guns, but people still have swords, and it's, there's machinery, but it's also like magic and stuff. It's a really interesting world, and it's got a very much a Deus Ex vibe where you can customize and build out your character in different way and solve problems differently. And I'm trying to do like the as non-lethal a playthrough as I can, you know, where I don't just straight up hobo murder everybody in sight. You know, I like knock them out, and there's like non-lethal options for taking out bosses and that sort of stuff. And it's a lot of fun. It's neat. I think the voice acting and some of the animation is pretty rough in that game, but the design of the game and the way that you play through it more than makes up for it. And I think Dishonored 2 is coming out later this year, like October or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely planning on getting that.
Yeah, so I was kind of getting ready for that, getting back into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, awesome. Well, if people want to find out more about you and your research and the stuff you're doing, where on the internet would they go to do that?
I don't really have a website or anything, and my Twitter is rarely used, but I'm trying to ramp that up. So you can find me at MDHannus, H-A-N-U-S, and you can also find me on the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's staff webpage.
Okay.
And I'm happy to, talk more there.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on. This is a topic that I've been meaning to cover for a while, and I'm glad I found the right person to do it with.
Oh, thanks. I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate you bringing me.
All right. All right. Congratulations. You have reached the end of yet another episode of the Psychology of Video Games podcast. I hope you liked that. I thought there were a lot of interesting ideas and thoughts brought up. If you have any stories or thoughts that you'd like to share about how you are influenced by achievements or not within a game and how they might impact your game or some of the most memorable experiences you've had related to those, head on over to psychologyofgames.com and find the blog post that goes with this podcast. Leave a comment. You can also find out how to get in touch with me over email, Facebook, or Twitter, and how to follow me on all of those. And there's also information there about how you can support this podcast and ensure that future podcasts like it come out by supporting me on Patreon. Thanks, and I will see you next episode.